sex and happiness.
Both enrich our lives, change our lives in ways that make life worth living. Yet it's surprising how few people can honestly say that they enjoy regular and fulfilling sex or describe themselves and their lives as happy. Host Lori Handlers helps you to explore, learn about, and most importantly, have great sex. And in the process, she helps you to experience real intimacy and happiness.
Sex and happiness.
You'll laugh a little, learn a little, and we hope put a smile on your face and a smile in your life. Now here's Lori.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to Sex and Happiness, a show about sex and happiness. And I know that this show is increasing your sex and happiness, and that's really all I care about. I want you to know they're connected and that if you are using your sexuality, if you're juicing yourself, you are getting happier. And that's what I want to know. So today we're going to talk about something that is like a hot button for me. Yes, faking orgasms. We've never had a show on faking orgasms before, and I gotta tell you, I don't care if you're a man who thinks you are like the best lover in the entire world. You grew up thinking you were Don Juan. You watched movies about Don Juan. You read every book in the world about Don Juan. I promise you, you can take this to the bank. There are women in your life who have faked orgasms on you, and you didn't know it. And I don't know if you remember the film When Harry Met Sally, when she does a total orgasm right in the delicatessen, and then a woman turns around and says, I'll have what she's having. I don't know if you remember that, but she was trying to convince him in that movie that women fake orgasms all the time and that men's egos are so big that they don't get it when a woman's faking orgasm. They can't tell, and they just think, they just go. They don't talk about it. They don't ask, is that really good for you? Or what would you like better? Whatever. There's a whole myriad of things that they could be doing to find out if these women are really orgasming like that. So that's how I'm leading in today. This part of the show is brought to you by Zestra, which has to do a lot with women's orgasms. And we're going right into it. My guest today is Alisa Royce, and she's the co-founder of NotSoSecret.com. A website dedicated to women's sexuality, and she's also the co-host of Sex Talk Radio, which has a few X's, S-E-X-X-X, Talk Radio, a radio show focused on the full spectrum of human sexuality. She's a popular speaker at events such as TEDx and Slutwalk and writes frequently about human rights and social justice. When she's not trying to make the world a little more open sexually, she's raising three girls with her boyfriend on their little farm in a big city. She's been known to tend her beehives in nothing but her underwear, a decision she usually regrets but never seems to learn from. I love that. Welcome to the show, Alisa.
Thank you, Lori. It's fun to be here.
That is so cute. So before we go on, because there are things that I said in your intro that I have to know about so that my guests aren't going, you know, they're not stuck like, what does little farm in a big city mean?
It's so funny. We live in Seattle, which is a real city by any measure, but our little city lot, we have 9 chickens, 50,000 bees, about 10 mature fruit trees, and huge vegetable gardens. So we're actually pretty huge organic farmer health food junkies around here.
And you're right in the middle of Seattle.
We are. Yeah, it's our little farm.
I love it.
We
good for you.
Thanks.
Excellent. Well, I live in Phoenix, and I actually have a little farm, too, but it's not as prolific as yours. I have 3 fruit trees.
I don't get stung by bees in your girly
right.
Butter, which
and
is
I have,
not fun.
Right. I have 4 varieties of lettuce. I have kale, and I have chard, but I don't have, you know, all those. But bees, that would be good. I love that you decide to tend your beehives in a bikini.
Well, it's more like I'll be sitting outside having my morning coffee, and then I'll see the bees buzzing around, and then I'll want to go talk to them. And they don't usually seem to want me there that early in the morning. So. But I never learn, you know.
I saw you on an article you wrote I think it was posted on Facebook, and that's why I contacted you, because you were talking about women faking orgasm.
Yeah.
And I think this is a really big topic, and I scratched my head. I said, I wonder why I never talked about this before on this show.
We don't talk about it ever. People don't talk about the fact that it happens. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So let's shed a little bit of light on this. You remember the scene from When Harry Met Sally?
I do. I love that scene.
And he swears, Billy Crystal swears that, I think it's Meg Ryan, and he mm-hmm. swears to her that this is not true. No woman has ever faked orgasm with him. So what do we know about this? Do we have any statistics or any facts about it that we can let people know, or we're just going for it?
I think we're mostly going for it. I was actually looking as we were speaking for a study that came out a few years ago, but I think the general consensus is that most, if not all, women have faked orgasm at some point in their life. And most of the discussion tends to be sort of sociopolitical about why anybody would do that. I don't know anybody who hasn't faked an orgasm. I doubt you do.
Well, I don't now.
I mean,
thank you for saying
yes. Everybody fakes it. And there's so, you know, the mechanisms by which women orgasm, they're different from woman to woman. And what makes, you know, what works on Monday might not work on Wednesday. And every woman has a different relationship with orgasms. I certainly have friends who report that they come super, super easily. I have one who has literally reported having an orgasm getting a facial. And then you get women like me on the other end of the spectrum who absolutely, no matter what, I have always had an incredibly difficult time having an orgasm. And I carried around a great deal of sort of guilt and insecurity about that for a long time. And in some cases, it was just easier to fake it and get on with it because it just didn't matter to me.
It's been easy for me to orgasm in my life, but there were periods of time. There were two sort of famous periods of time in my life that I have talked about on the show. One is, and I've talked about on YouTube also, one is where I had some thought about orgasm somewhere in my 20s. Mm-hmm. Like I started to feel guilty about my sex life or ashamed about my sex. I don't really know what it was, but I know that I would stop breathing and I would have the thought,
right?
I'm going to, and then I wouldn't because I was having the thought about it and I was holding my breath. So I didn't have orgasms, and that lasted a period of years. And so I don't know why I blocked myself like that. I went back to reading Betty Dodson's book, Liberating Masturbation, and I got myself back to stop being that stupid thing that was going on with me by making sound. And I would just hear myself making sound, and if I wasn't making sound, I would be suspect. So I would make sound, and then I would for sure have an orgasm. And the other thing I could think of is I had a lover for a while, maybe 5.5, 6 years, and I feel like he got into a groove and he never deviated from that groove.
So you got bored.
I would be in my head going like, I can't believe he's doing this again.
Yeah.
I'm going,
yeah.
I want to pull my hair out, his hair out. And when I said something, like, could we be a little, I try to be as gentle as possible. I tend to be a very direct and sometimes harsh. Mm-hmm. person. And so I tried to be really sweet, like, can we do a little something different, dear? And it didn't go over that well. So those are the times I know I faked it for sure during those two periods.
Yeah, I would say guilt and boredom are probably two driving factors in what would inhibit your pleasure in sex, period, and certainly make it more difficult to have orgasms. And totally not uncommon. I mean, it's, you know, we sort of laugh and joke that women get hot in their heads, but it's true. You know, we get hot and cold in our heads. And if you're not checked in and feeling connected, the chances of having gratifying sex, regardless of whether or not you have an orgasm, is just greatly diminished.
I think you're right. Well, I've said often to people that, and I don't know where I read this, but I did read that it takes men to be directly touched, like to be directly touched on the penis or on the scrotum. Men could be directly touched within 30 seconds of having the idea that there's arousal happening here.
Right, right.
And for women, it takes, on the average, a full 25 minutes of wanting to be touched directly on the clitoris or entered directly into the vagina. And I think that's because women need to be seduced in their head.
I think like that's really true. And our bodies respond. I mean, I don't, you know, not to be overly graphic, though I suppose it's perfectly safe here. There's certainly times when I've been in situations that weren't really directly sexual, but they were really erotic to me for whatever reason. And I was getting really turned on, and my body, you know, I would actually get wet between my legs. It was a sort of like precursor to sex, right? Even in a situation that had nothing to do with sex, because whatever was going on in my head was so erotic to me. And it, yes, we do have to build up that way. You can't just sort of say, you know, hey, baby, you're hot, and then start pushing the button and expect it to work, right?
I don't remember if it was the New York Times Magazine or the Washington Post Magazine, but they ran the something about the secret to sex, men's sexuality and women's sexuality. Uh-huh. And they showed a man, you know, like a light switch on, off.
Pretty much, yeah.
And they showed a woman, and it looked like all the dials and the bells and whistles of flying an airplane.
I always like the sort of, you know, the feminist sex positive chick in me always wants to stand up screaming and say, no, it's not that simple. But it really does sort of seem that way, doesn't it? Women seem so much more complicated. And certainly our mechanics are more complicated. If our minds and hearts aren't, our mechanics certainly are. Orgasms, yeah, are this just terribly, you know, elusive thing for some people. But for everybody, it seems like they're held up as this ideal that, you know, you've had good sex when you have an orgasm. The lesson that that gives you then is, if you haven't had an orgasm, then obviously you haven't had good sex. So maybe you're not a good lover, or maybe your body doesn't work, or you're flawed in some way if you haven't had an orgasm. And that's where I tend to get really, really frustrated, because it puts all of this pressure on this one thing, as if that is actually the indication of a completely full and happy and satisfying sex life. And it makes me crazy.
It's true. It's like it puts the attention on one event.
Yeah. I mean, the example I give to people a lot of times when I'm talking to women about, you know, the role that the orgasm plays in your sex life, I say, imagine that you're in Paris and you want to go to the Louvre and see whatever painting it is that you want to go see. In order to get there, you've got this 12-block walk through Paris in order to get there. Imagine if you didn't go in any of the coffee shops and didn't stop in any of the cafes and didn't stop in any of the bookstores and just were focused entirely on getting to the Louvre. Imagine how much you would miss. And imagine how much worse it would be if you did stop everywhere along the way, had a beautiful day, and got there right as the Louvre was closing so you couldn't go. And then somehow you tainted that beautiful day by saying, well, it wasn't any good after all. I didn't get to the museum. And I think that that's how we look at orgasms and sex. Like, nothing counts unless you have an orgasm. And that's, it just seems really dismissive to me about the sort of depth and spectrum of our sexuality.
It's not only dismissive, you know what? It's shallow.
Oh, it's super shallow. Yeah.
It's so shallow. It's so, I don't know, it's just simple-minded, I guess I want to say, because there's so much more to sexuality, and there's so much more of a chance of orgasm if there's so much more to sexuality.
Right, if you're not worried about it. I think that the piece, right. I think that the peace of mind that you're referring to is one, I think it was called, you know, oh, it's not that big a deal about orgasms. And when I finally just gave up in my head, essentially, and said, I am never going to try and have an orgasm again, my sex life got so much better, because I stopped feeling like a failure, you know, and I got really, really direct with my lovers and said, you know, very clearly, I am not focused on orgasms. Making me orgasm is next to impossible. And if I feel like I have to have an orgasm in order for you to feel like you're a good lover, it's never going to happen, and I'm not going to have any fun. So let's just take that off the table. And the quality of my sex life improved massively, just hugely. So, you know, I learned to focus on the everything else, and sex got so much more fun. You know, I'd find myself having sex for a much longer time and much more creatively, because it was like, oh, what does this do? What can I discover now?
That's great. That is precisely the article that you wrote, that I wrote to you about. Because I remember reading it and thinking, this woman is onto something. And to be that honest and to be able to be that communicative to lovers, like getting everyone off the hook.
Yeah.
And allowing exploration and adventure and freshness and all this stuff. What a smart woman you are.
Oh, thank you. I think actually I was just a really frustrated one. But I, you know, it's funny. I was actually just telling somebody else, when I met my boyfriend, who is absolutely the man I plan to spend the rest of my life with and is an amazing lover in ways that I could never chronicle. He read that article before he ever kissed me for the first time. And so it was great. It was like, I didn't even have to have this conversation with him. We agreed that when we started exploring ourselves as lovers, it was just that. It was an exploration. You know, there wasn't a goal. There was no prize. It was just, it has been just fantastically fulfilling.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Well, we're going to take a short break right there, because when we come back, there's some other things. There's some other orgasm stereotypes and things that I want to ask you about. You're just the person.
Okay.
So we'll be right back. If you just tuned in, you are listening to Sex and Happiness. I'm Laurie Handlers, your host. And my guest today is Alyssa Royce, and she's the co-founder of NotSoSecret.com. And we're talking about faking orgasms, why anyone would, who has, whether you've experienced one or not, unbeknownst to you, or whether you have and you knew. This is what we're talking about today. We're taking faking out of the closet. So we'll be right back. Stay tuned.
Many times on Sex and Happiness, you've heard Lori talk about emotional release and how important it is. Well, now you can do emotional release in the privacy of your own home. In Lori's CD, Shamanic Release and Lati Han, she creates a safe and sacred space in which you can do the powerful work Lori is known for in her sacred sexuality courses. Lori sets you up with the proper positioning and breathing. Then she guides you through each emotional state to the beat of tribal African rhythms. This CD provides an easy way to do emotional clearing work on a regular basis. Order your copy of Shamanic Release and Lati Han today and watch your relationships walk free of emotional baggage. To order the Shamanic Release and Lati Han CD by Lori Handlers, go to www.butterflyworkshops.com right now.
Hey all, want to have a real adventure this year? I, Laurie Handlers, personally invite you to come with me on a tantric tour of the heart of India from November 19th to December 1st, 2012. You'll see the Taj Mahal and visit the fabulous Fatehpur Sikri, home of the great Mughal king Akbar. You'll experience the sacred lake of Pushkar and visit the pink city of Jaipur. Then, at dawn, from a boat on the Ganges in Varanasi, you'll see exquisite Hindu prayer rituals. Then, you'll see Sarnath, where the Buddha gave his first speech after attaining enlightenment, as well. And then, you'll explore the exotic Kama Sutra temples in Khajuraho. You'll have ample opportunity to see these world-renowned temples up close, and you'll even get to meditate inside. Finally, you'll shop till you drop in the Paraganj Bazaar in New Delhi. Throughout the tour, I'll be teaching tantric techniques and principles, and I promise that you will shift your consciousness and come closer to attaining your spiritual goals. For more information about the tantric tour to the heart of India, call me at 202-686-7440. That's 202-686-7440. Or write to me, Laurie, at butterflyworkshops.com. You can find out everything you want to know at butterflyworkshops.com, Tantric Tours. Please note that no previous experience of Tantra or yoga is necessary. I invite you to join me in this unique experience touring the incredible country of India, and I must warn you, this is not your typical tour, and you are not a typical tourist.
We're back with Sex and Happiness, and I'm Laurie Handlers, and I have a wonderful guest today, Alyssa Royce, and she is the co-host of Sex Talk Radio, that's spelled with three X's, and she focuses on the full spectrum of human sexuality, and today she's talking with me about faking orgasm and about just how it is for people, how kind of prejudice it is to only focus on orgasms for sexuality, how if we do only focus on orgasm, we're robbing ourselves of an amazing set of other experiences that have to do with sexuality, and how this article that she wrote influenced people about taking the focus off orgasm, including the man she's currently with. So how great is that? You write an article and your lover gets attracted to you.
Yeah, that was pretty funny.
That's called the laws of attraction or the secret. I like that.
Well, it's definitely called be completely honest about who you are, and the rewards definitely you will be loved for who you are then. Right. And it's totally worth it. Yeah.
Exactly. It's beautiful. Well, I want to talk about this other stuff. Like we didn't talk about in the first segment, although the first segment was very juicy and full. There was a time when it was thought that if women didn't have vaginal orgasms, that they were having immature orgasms by having clitoral orgasms.
Oh, dear God.
So I want to address that for a minute, because one has to remember back to that. I mean,
right.
Some of the younger listeners listening won't remember that. They'll know that Plenty of Attention and certainly rap songs and all kinds of other things are aimed at pleasing women these days and getting them off and having them have great sexual experiences. I don't know if that's the way to learn necessarily, but I know that there's buzz about all kinds of orgasm these mm-hmm. days. But do you have anything to say about that? Like anything to say about the judgment? Now they're saying new stuff. I just heard something recently about if you don't have a G-spot orgasm, or if you don't know how to ejaculate as a woman. I mean, all this
First
stuff.
First of all, it infuriates me because there's this obsessive need with sex in general to pathologize sex. So the way that you like to have sex, somebody will attach a pathology to it, that it's linked to childhood trauma, or it's this, that, or the other. But with women's orgasms in specific, and women's sexuality in specific, we analyze them to death to make sure that they are working, quote, right and properly. And there's an entire industry devoted to, you know, making sure that women have X kind of orgasm. And it has been an interesting, you know, if you go back as far as the 1800s, it was believed that when women didn't have orgasms, that they were, well, crazy, hysterical. And so women would actually go to doctor's offices in the 1800s in order to get masturbated so that they could have orgasms and it would make them sane. And this is actually what led to the invention of the vibrator, because it was far too difficult for doctors to manually masturbate women and get them off. And they invented a vibrator to make it easier. So it tells you that the struggle to get women to have orgasms in a way that is deemed medically good enough is hundreds of years old. But and it frustrates me because, you know, my sexuality is not a pathology and my body is different from yours and it's different from anybody else's. And the only job of my sexuality is to give me pleasure. And the only person who knows whether or not I'm having pleasure is me. There's not a doctor who can tell me whether or not I'm having pleasure. I know that. And so to place these external things on it, it removes our own agency and autonomy from our sexuality. And that is the trend that scares me. But beyond that, I think it's important to note about the clitoral orgasms that the clitoris is the only organ in the human body whose only job is to give you pleasure. Everything else
right.
in your body has some other function in terms of health and perpetuation of the species. The clitoris, all it does is give you pleasure. So the idea that that's an immature orgasm is just nonsense. It's just silly. And the clitoris is
yeah.
such an amazing, complicated structure that people don't understand their clitoris, but it's such a cool thing.
What do you mean they don't understand it?
Well, I think
that's an interesting statement.
I think most people think that your clitoris is just the cute little button that happens when you pull back the hood, right? There's a little button. And they think that that's your clitoris.
Right.
And it is. That's the head of your clitoris.
Yeah, that's just one little part
of it. One little part of it. But the whole, you know, if you look at your clitoris, it's actually like I tell people to think of it as a little tiny penis. And that whole shaft that comes up that's hidden that you can't see necessarily is incredibly sensitive. You know, I've actually told this to men and it's helped them really figure out how to pleasure women is that, you know, that also likes to be stroked and rubbed just like a little tiny penis. And then the nub, the little pearly part that everybody recognizes, you know, is very, very sensitive, but that's just the head. You know, that's just the beginning.
That's great. Thank you for that. That's like a takeaway.
There's your little tip, everybody. Yeah.
There's a clitoral takeaway.
Yeah.
So it's good. We're busting through the midst of this. And listen, if you're listening to the show and you faked orgasm, you know, you're let off the hook. Whoever you are out there in listener land, I did. And so did Alyssa. And we had to, and you probably had to too, not because someone made you fake an orgasm, but because the pressure was on. And so you did, you
well,
know, like,
there's a lot of reasons. There's the two main reasons that I wrote about in that article. I think, first of all, a lot of times I think that we fake orgasms to just get it over with, right? Like we're bored. It's got on long enough and we want it to stop. And obviously faking orgasm is less preferable than communicating directly with your lover, but we've all done it. But the other reason, and the one that I think raised a lot of eyebrows when I wrote about it, is that sometimes we do it to make our lovers feel good about themselves. And I'm not sure that that's always a bad thing, right? So if I'm with a lover who I'm not planning on spending the rest of my life with, he's just somebody who I enjoy, we have good sex. And in order for him to feel like he did a good job, he needs to think that I had an orgasm. And I know that in my heart and soul, I don't actually care whether or not I did. I can't think of a really good reason not to give that to him, you know? Mm. And mm-hmm. that angered a lot of people when I said that. But if everybody would sort of calm down and think about it, we all do things to make our lovers feel good. And if
sure, if we cook them breakfast when we don't feel like cooking,
sure.
We put on makeup and high heels
right.
when we don't feel like it.
Any number of things, right? Like,
yeah.
And I don't consider that a game. I don't consider that dishonest. I consider that what happens in a relationship. And if the amount of pleasure that they get from believing you had an orgasm is far, far, far greater than the amount you actually care about whether or not you did, I don't see anything wrong with that as an occasional thing. Now, if you are doing it and you are not happy and satisfied with your sex life and you are doing that instead of communicating about that and instead of getting your needs met, that's a different issue. But if it's just the occasional, you know, whatever, here you go, baby, I actually have no issue with that. I don't currently do it because my lover would know, I think. But
it's yeah, not. Okay. So it's a practice that you condone under certain circumstances. Yes.
As long as you are not denying yourself pleasure. If you are unsatisfied with your sex life and are not actively working on that and communicating that with your lover, then that's a different issue. And I've never faked an orgasm with somebody that I was having a serious relationship with. It's always just been sort of, you know, a casual, playful, consensual thing in a relationship that didn't really mean much to me beyond the sex. And it was like, mm-hmm. whatever.
Yeah. And I think the thing about getting it over with, and that may be less personal also to someone's partner than it might just be that someone's had a really busy day and they're going to have a really busy day tomorrow and they can't take 5 hours tonight
totally.
To just really like totally explore everything.
Totally. And I totally, you know, it's a lot better than the whole tap on the head of, are you done yet, honey? Because that doesn't feel good. And there's no reason to hurt your lover's ego. So
I feel like women have this thing though that they often feel that they take too long. So they might fake it to get it over with because they are somehow self-conscious.
That makes
about
sense.
How. Yeah, that's sad. It's sad, but I think it's true.
I think it is true.
I speak to lots of women in my courses who I say to them, you should just like lay back and learn to receive pleasure.
Absolutely.
Any way that it comes and be directive in it and whatever. And they're like, really?
Yeah, that's a really important thing. And I love that you're working on that. Because the truth is the average is something like 18 minutes for a woman to, from the time one actively starts working up to an orgasm, it generally takes women around 18 minutes to have an orgasm. And that's a long time. And I think you're right that a lot of women don't fully accept that they are deserving of that amount of focused pleasure and they feel guilty because they're taking so long. And that really breaks my heart. Because you do. We all do. We all deserve
Everyone deserves that kind of attention.
Yeah. I would not think twice about giving that to my lover. So I certainly would not think twice about receiving that.
Exactly. You know? It's great. Now, we have just a few more minutes, but I want to ask you about your thoughts about the Viagra-type products that are coming out, these pills that are coming. Little blue pills are coming out for women.
I don't like them for men or women.
Okay, got it. Thanks.
Yeah, it sort of gets back to that whole pathologizing of sex, that there is one proper way to have sex and that it involves a rock hard erection that lasts forever and you can just keep going. And I think that not only as we age, but just as we experience different amounts of stress and happiness in our lives, our sexuality is different and it is absolutely fluid, and that we need to be able to embrace the variations in our sexuality. That sometimes we're ready to go and it's rock hard and we last forever, and sometimes we're not. It's a sort of slow, gentle thing that never actually gets to the big climax. And that embracing the variations in our sexuality and the organic nature of it is going to make us all a lot happier than trying to, you know, meet some idealized goal, much less look at our sexuality as a pathology, which just drives me nuts.
Yeah, I got that. It's great. It's so good that you're an advocate for freeing that. I'm thinking as we're talking that I don't think it would matter much if we were addressing this to a lesbian audience either, because I'm sure there are women who prefer women who have also faked orgasms.
Oh, I'm 100% certain, because many of them are my friends.
It's not based on gender preference.
It's not based on gender preference. And there's, you know, I've never met a lesbian who does anything all that different than we do with straight people, except those who don't like penetration. But there's plenty of strap-on penises for lesbians. So the right. body mechanics of lesbians are the same as the body mechanics of straight women.
Sure.
So are the head games that we play with ourselves and the ruts we get in with our lovers. You know, people are people.
Well, I want to thank you so much, Alyssa Royce, for being my guest today.
Thank you, Lori. It was fun.
How can people find you so that they can hear more from you or read your articles or blogs or what have you? Tell us the best ways.
AlyssaRoyce.com is my personal musings on everything. I'm just Alyssa Royce on Twitter. I'm Alyssa Royce on Facebook. And of course, NotSoSecret.com. I've got a team of amazing writers there writing about women's sexuality. And then my friend Lene and I host Sex Talk Radio on the Progressive Radio Network every Wednesday. And that's Sex with Three X's, which I picture every time I say that.
I want to spell your name too so that people know how to get you at Alyssa Royce. So it's A-L-Y-S-S-A Royce, R-O-Y-S-E .com.
That's me. Right. Thank you so Great. Much.
You're welcome so much. And before we break, I want to remind all my listeners to go to my website, butterflyworkshops.com, and sign in for my newsletter. I have a lot of changes and travel planned, and I want to make sure that you receive the updates from me, telling you where I'll be and how you can meet up with me. I want you to be the first to know of my new and exciting adventures and projects. Many of them involve you. So please take action now. Go to butterflyworkshops.com, sign up for my newsletter by clicking in the upper right column. Thanks, and stay tuned. We'll be right back with Sex and Happiness.
My question for people right now is, if you're a woman who could use a little zest and zing in your arousal response, or maybe you know women or a woman who could use this, because many women say that their feelings of desire, arousal, and sexual satisfaction don't happen as naturally or as often as they'd like. So I want to tell you about Zestra, because Zestra was developed to meet this much-needed option for women. Zestra Safe and a patented blend of botanical oils and extracts, and it's created to help women have increased sexual sensations. Zestra comes in convenient single-dose personal packets. Each packet keeps the essential arousal oils and extracts free, fresh, and safe from light. And with application of Zestra, it starts to work within 3 to 5 minutes. And at about 10 minutes, there's something called the Zestra Rush. And that can last up to about 45 minutes. The great news is that Zestra can be used as frequently as you like during each sexual experience. Now, I'm somebody who believes that all women deserve sexual satisfaction. That's why I do this show, in case you hadn't noticed. So I believe that men and women deserve sexual satisfaction. So if you're a woman who isn't getting that kind of arousal response that you want, please call 877-426-8047. That's 877-426-8047. And please remember to say you heard about Zestra from Lori Handlers on the Sex and Happiness Show. We'll be right back.
Are you in pain or unable to sleep? Ever hear about how the body needs glutathione for natural cleansing? Could you use a boost of energy? Try Life Wave Patches. There are a variety of patches to choose from. Each one of them is designed like a small band-aid to help your body with the challenges of life when you're simply not getting what the body needs for support. And you can use these amazing patches on your pets. Go to Life Wave Patches for Pets and People on Facebook and see Suzanne Summers' interview with Dr. David Schmidt about patches that reduce stress and inflammation while increasing energy. You can also find out more at ValerieHandlers.com. That's ValerieHandlers.com. Or call Valerie at 714-928-6399 to order your patches, or consider becoming an independent LifeWave distributor. That's 714-928-6399.
Well, we're back with Sex and Happiness for the second half of the show, and this part of the show is brought to you by Sex Butter. And I just want to say something about Sex Butter. The creator of Sex Butter is Bonnie Gale, and she has a project called Body Liberator. And you can see me and a whole bunch of other women in the bathtub. We're not together in the bathtub. Each of us has our own bathtub video. It's called the Bathtub Talks. And we talk about how we feel about our bodies, past, present, and future. And I'd love for you to go see mine, so you can just go to YouTube and type in Lori Handler's Bathtub, and you will see the part of the Body Liberator series by the creator of Sex Butter. And we'll talk more about Sex Butter a little later in the show. Well, we're going to be talking about something that there's a lot of talk about these days. It's called the Sacred Feminine. And I'm going to find out what it means to honor the Sacred Feminine from my guest. Why would a person choose to do it? What does it really mean? Because people throw that term around. I'm honoring the Sacred Feminine. And I don't know if everyone who's throwing that term around knows what it means. And I think my guest now does know what it means. So let me introduce him. His name is Carson Boyd, and he's a counselor for those who would like to end suffering, which is a fabulous job. And he wants people to recognize the depths of their being. Carson's a graduate of the School for the Work and has taught the work of Byron Katie at the Southwest Institute for Healing Arts, better known to those of us in the Phoenix, Scottsdale area as SWEHA. He is a champion for the Sacred Feminine and its expression in the world. So welcome to the show, Carson.
Well, thank you, Lori. Good to be here.
Yeah, it's great to have you. And so we're going to get right in there. We're going to jump right in with what the hell is the Sacred Feminine? If we could, can we define it so that people could understand what it is? It's not just honoring a woman, right?
Right. Well, first off, if you look at the word sacred, it tends to apply to that which is divine, right? So I would say that the Sacred Feminine is the aspect of femininity that is divinity itself.
Mm, I like that.
Yeah.
My voice got lower.
Oh, good.
Okay, so it's honoring the aspect of the feminine that is divinity itself. Love it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that's good. As a concept, that sounds great. It sounds like something that somebody might write poetry to. It sounds like something that a person might paint a picture to. Not Picasso. I don't know if Picasso honored the divine feminine. Every time I look at paintings by Picasso, who's one of my favorite artists, I think, he didn't like them at all.
Oh, really? Hmm.
I mean, he broke them up into parts.
Yeah.
You know, their eyeball was in one part of the painting, and their tit was in another part of the painting, and their smile was somewhere else. I don't know if Picasso liked women at all. I think he liked to slice and dice them. What you're discussing, the definition that you're giving, is something that sounds like inspiration for poetry, something like Rumi poetry or Hafez poetry. Mm-hmm. But I think you're talking about something even more tangible.
Oh, I would say so, yes. I mean,
so how does that translate into the tangible?
Well, I can speak from my experience, and that is that by opening up to the idea that the person in front of me is actually a representative of divinity, or if you will, a representative of God, then it has provided an enhanced experience of interacting with and connecting with another person.
You know, when you say that, I have something that I say often in my courses when I talk to people about looking at their partner as a god or a goddess. I say that elevates the current way of looking at each other. And if I'm looking into the eyes of God and my partner is looking into the eyes of goddess, if we should get into a fight, it's a really different fight than fighting with a bitch or a dog.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and young people these days call each other hoes and bitches, mm-hmm, and dog, awful thing.
Yeah, yeah.
When I think about having a fight with God,
sounds kind of silly to me, right?
Right. I mean, I don't want to.
Right. How arrogant could I be?
Exactly. So if you were my partner and I saw you in that regard, I probably wouldn't want to fight with you much. I would just want to honor you,
yeah,
and praise you and build you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So in your experience, let's trace back a little bit to how this happened. Like, how did you open to what's called the divine feminine and have a realization or an aha moment or a transformation that led you to say, okay, I'm going to live out my life like this? Because this is a big transformation for a regular red-blooded male.
Yeah. Well, I began to become interested in surrender. Some teachers that I had spoke very highly of surrender, and it left me thinking, maybe there's something there for me that I have not discovered yet. And out of that interest, I began to have deeper and deeper experiences of surrender. And the more I went into it, the more I recognized that surrender seems very closely aligned with the feminine principle. You know, if you think of, I think of femininity as being much like water. And water surrenders to everything. Water says, gravity, okay, I'm there, right? There's no argument. Yeah.
But water is also so strong. I mean, water hones everything in its way. It finds the path of least resistance, and then it wears down over time.
Yes.
It wears down everything that has a sharp edge.
Yeah. There's a beach north of San Francisco where they used to dump garbage into the ocean. And lots of glass bottles ended up in the ocean, and they eventually became all broken up and ground to smooth edges. So now it's like a beach filled with jewels. It's called Glass Beach.
Oh, that sounds fantastic. We on the East Coast, we call that sea glass.
Yeah.
Well, that's a really nice analogy for that.
Uh-huh.
So this surrender, it doesn't involve waving the white flag. It's not like a surrender in war or...
No, it goes beyond that. Well, the surrender that I eventually came upon was actually a complete surrender of my own identity. The egoic part of myself seemed to completely cease existing. And then in that state of surrender, again, I was quite impressed with the feminine quality of it. And there was one time where I was having an experience, and it was as if my imagination kept showing me these delightful, creative images that were artistic and beautiful. And eventually I said to whatever was providing that creative imagery, "Sweetheart, you spend so much time showing me who you are for me. Please show me who you are for yourself." And then everything got very quiet, and it was as if some bottom dropped out, and all of my thoughts ceased, and I disappeared into the space between thoughts, and in a very real sense, was no more.
And I
can't really tell you much more about it, because I would need concepts in order to convey something about it, and it seemed free of not only thoughts, but free of all concepts as well.
We can talk about the nature of your living now and the nature of your life and what happens when you're relating to others.
Can I just say one more thing about that?
Yeah.
And there was something about that experience that was very womb-like, and it seemed to be somehow analogous to the environment that a baby is nurtured into being within. And once again, it gave me a great deal of reverence and respect for the feminine principle and what it contributes to life.
So it sounds like you had a kind of a rebirth in which you gave up a lot of your learned and patterned behaviors, which came with the territory of growing up as an American male in whatever decade you grew up in. And you know, and all the baggage that comes along with that, and what number son you were of your mother and father, and if you had brothers, or, you know, all those things that go along with what it is to be a man.
And an identity, yes.
And an identity, and out of your seeking a very unique kind of an experience, you caused it to happen in you, and lots of things quieted down.
And what I was left with was a profound reverence for women.
This is good. Well, we're going to stop here for a moment, but when we come back, you know, I'm going to ask you about what happens when you meet women. I mean, it seems to me that women would all like just fall right in love with you. They would go to you like bees to honey because you're not providing a certain way of being that resists them. But I don't know. I'm going to live in the mystery.
Okay, well, I'll preserve it.
Until we come back. So if you just tuned in, you are listening to Sex and Happiness, a show about sex and happiness. And in my last segment before Carson, we were talking about faking orgasms. And now we're talking about a whole other thing, a subject that's transformative and might offer a lot to your life. So stay tuned. We'll be right back when I ask Carson Boyd, a person who helps people end suffering, how people can end suffering, and other questions like what happens when he meets women.
Are you wondering what book to read to jumpstart your life, get the best from relationships, attain the deepest feelings of intimacy? Do you want the best sex along with great happiness? Get your copy of Sex and Happiness, The Tantric Laws of Intimacy by Lori Handlers right now. You'll learn how to make love in the unknown, take the performance anxiety and reaching a goal out of sex. You'll learn subtle ways of communication and really important practices to empower you when dealing with an intimate partner. You'll let go of blame and struggle. Doesn't this sound great? Sex and Happiness puts the innocence back into sex and gives Tantra the respect it deserves. Take charge of your life, physically, emotionally, and spiritually with Sex and Happiness by Lori Handlers, only $19.99 paperback and $14.99 ebook. Order your copy today by going to butterflyworkshops.com. That's butterflyworkshops.com for your copy of Sex and Happiness.
We're back with Sex and Happiness. I'm Lori Handlers. Today I'm speaking with Carson Boyd. And Carson has a great job in that he helps people. He counsels them to end suffering and to go to the depths of their being. And it sounds like he's gone there, so he's taking people, or showing people at least, a way they too can get there. So we'll find out a little bit more about that, like how he facilitates that or how people do get there, how many people want to get there. But first, the question that I'm on the edge of my chair about. So, Carson, when you meet women, I mean, do they just, like, glom onto you?
Well, of course, it depends on how open the woman is to that experience. But I can tell you that I have found that I can fall in love with a woman at the drop of a hat. And I don't need to know her or know anything about her history. I can just allow that to be there. And if someone is open to that, then there is, there can be an instant love affair right there.
This is, it's phenomenal what you're describing, and then I guess there must be some women who don't trust that, so that might be what you're talking about in terms of their own openness. I imagine some women might think that you were a player if you could fall in love with every woman.
Yeah.
I did a show on players.
Yeah,
so that's not it, though. That's not the case. It's like you're swimming in the ocean of the feminine aspect, and one aspect of the feminine aspect is to be open, so open to women that when they come into your presence, you're surrendered. You just go, yes, kind of like do with me what you will, or use me, or be with me, or love me, or whatever. But it doesn't sound like you have an agenda, which is the most amazing thing about everything we've been talking about translated into plain English. Like, you're not playing.
Yeah, it typically, there's nothing that I need from them.
So you don't need to take anything away from them.
Right.
Like, take anything.
Yeah, like, they can respond however they respond, you know. If they go, oh, you're being all this loving with me and I don't like you, it's like, oh, okay, I'm cool with that too.
It's a very powerful position to be in, to not need anything from another.
You know, one of my definitions of power is to tell the truth and take what you get.
Yeah, you're a person right after my own heart.
I'm good.
You really are. It's like, let the chips fall where they may.
That's
like
right.
My responsibility, I feel, is to to speak my truth.
Mm-hmm.
And if someone doesn't like it, or if they find it harsh, or if they, however they find it, that's how they find it. I'm just speaking my truth, and I'm not trying to hurt anybody, and I don't need anything from them either. So I know of what you speak, and I know how powerful it is. It's like, this is the way I describe it, and I don't know if you can identify with this or not, which is I feel internally married.
Mm.
Like, I'm bonded to myself. My masculine and my feminine, and in this case, you would call them sacred. The God and goddess within me have found each other. And they're fluid bonded. And so when that happened, which mine happened in different ways than yours, I wasn't on any journeys, but I was on the journey, the tantric journey. I was doing my practices, and I was watching to see my changes over time. And about 5 or 6 years into it, one day I woke up and I was different.
Hmm.
And I didn't need anybody.
Isn't that wonderful?
That's complete and whole.
That's freedom.
Yeah. So it sounds like you got there, however you got there, and it's such a freeing place to be. And now it's whoever responds to you. I guess they respond to you in a few different ways. One is that some people seek you out for counseling and for teaching the Byron Katie method, and to people who are open to some kind of a transformational learning.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other way must be when you meet people and either they respond to you or they don't. But some people probably wonder if you're for real.
You know, another piece of this is that I eventually noticed that the only time I ever loved anybody was right now.
Mm-hmm.
If that's true, then the only opportunity for me to have love in my life is right now. And mm-hmm. the only person to experience it with is whoever is in front of me. And then I also embrace the idea that there are no mistakes and no accidents in reality. So the appropriate person for me to love is the person who's right here.
Yeah, that must mess with some people who have a storybook idea of Cinderella and Prince Charming.
Yeah, that's a nice story, and I invested in it for a while. It didn't work out so well.
Yeah, it doesn't work out so well for most people. I mean, the statistics on the institution of marriage are not doing too well, even though it's being touted, maybe even more so these days by certain segments of the population. But it doesn't sound like it's doing that well for people. This is like life as a religious experience rather than religion as a religious experience.
Interesting, yeah.
So I'm sure that some people do respond to you positively.
Oh, yeah.
And want to receive the now love from you that you're offering.
Yeah, some people think I'm yummy.
Such a wonderful place to be in, mm-hmm. that you're describing, really, really is. You just kind of answered it in a nutshell about misunderstandings that people might have about love and romance. I mean, you're talking about it in the highest sense.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe we can talk for a moment about how men can improve the way they relate to women, and then
I have something which is an experience that I had where this woman was just really turning on the. She was coming from that divine, radiant feminine,
mm-hmm.
and
I wanted to translate into real.
Yeah,
you know, like reality for people. Like, that's it. What is it like when you're with a woman?
So this woman comes over, and we're sitting on the couch, and she is pouring it on. I don't know how to say it, but, you know, there's something. Okay, here's one way to say it. When sometimes women sparkle, have you noticed?
Yeah.
And when they do that and aim it at a man, it can be captivating. And so.
Well, in my world, that's called Shakti Pot.
Yeah, okay.
A woman, like, throws her feminine essence all over you. Sometimes she throws it out into the room.
Uh-huh.
And it's like, it's mesmerizing, hypnotizing, phantasmagorical. Go ahead.
Yeah. So she's doing this, and I'm sitting there thinking, oh, my God, look at her. Like, she's the most beautiful woman I've ever seen. She's completely charming and adorable. And so then, as the evening progressed, we ended up moving to the bedroom, and we started making out, and something had happened, and that energy just wasn't there. I didn't know what was going on. For all I knew, I had somehow caused it. And so we kissed a little bit, and I just thought, well, this isn't working very good. I said, well, you know, I could turn on the light and read to you a little bit. She said, yeah, that would be great. And then in short order, she said that she had had something happen where she just shut down, and in her terms, she had run away. And so I read for a while, and we talked for a while. We just confess, acknowledge, accept, and allow what's there. And then energy tends to move. It's when we resist it and try to force it to be something else that it gets all convoluted. So that's what happened.
So you didn't take this personally, I take it.
No, I didn't.
That in itself is a skill and an art, to not take something like that personally. I don't know many people, men or women, who wouldn't take it personally that somebody just turned off to them.
Yeah.
And admitted it.
Well, you know, the truth is that I learned that from Byron Katie. You know, she told me time and time again that no one ever reacts to you. They always are reacting to their story of who you are. So there's no need to take anything personally.
That's very wise advice.
Yeah.
No need to take anything personally. I learned that from Don Miguel Ruiz.
Nice, yeah.
The same lesson, yeah. Don't take anything personally. It's part of the four agreements.
Ah, okay, good.
And it's true. People are reacting until they learn to respond or be still. People are reacting to some historical thing, to some knee-jerk reaction, to some interpretation, to some meaning that they're adding to the situation. This woman says she kind of ran away. Maybe you were just too good to be true. I can add lots of interpretations.
Sure.
To the story.
Yeah, that's a valid one. Who knows, right?
And maybe she just needed to slow down.
Yeah, that could be too.
You know, so she did what she did. You were so wise, so in the present moment, to be able to just switch things. Like, okay, let's switch.
Yeah.
And you know, kids do that all the time.
Yeah.
Kids go, I'm tired of this game. Let's do something else.
Yeah.
And nobody takes it personally. Or sometimes they do. They go, oh, you're no fun. And then they get over it in 2 minutes.
Yep. You know, my story about it is when two people come together, what they're looking for is what they can do together that works. And it pays to be flexible.
That's so good.
Yeah.
There's the tip for the day.
Yeah.
Do what works, and it pays to be flexible, because not everything is going to turn out in whatever imagination you had about it.
That's right.
It's not going to probably turn out that way. Chances, for the most part, are that it's not at all going to turn out that way. It's going to turn out how it turns out.
Yeah.
So now let's talk a little bit, because we don't have too much time left. Why do people come to see you?
Well, you know, the truth is, I tend to make it up on the spot, so there's not a pat thing that I do. One of the tools that I use, as I have said, is the work of Byron Katie, which is a very powerful form of inquiry that assists, it actually engages the mind of the client in unraveling itself, which is quite a trick, you know, because the mind's job is to prove that it's right.
Yeah, and to keep everything the same.
Yeah, and if you can get the mind engaged in the process of finding out where it was believing stuff that is not true, as I said, that's quite a trick, and that's what we do in the work, and help people to unravel their thinking, and the cause of all of our suffering is our thoughts and what we believe.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Wow, that's a big statement right there. The cause of all of our suffering is what we believe and our thoughts.
Yeah. The worst thing that ever happened is an unexamined thought.
That's great. So it sounds like people would come to you or find out about you if they're really suffering.
Yeah. You know, it's one of those things where the darker it feels for you at the moment, the bigger the potential payoff that we have by unraveling the thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So I agree with you. I think it might be hard to attract some people, though, because sometimes when it's so dark like that, there's like an investment in thinking they're the only one.
Yeah, yeah, and it can feel hopeless. You know, and it's not that this only works with that. I'm just saying that the darker it feels, the more potential payoff it is.
So people can find you. How can they find you?
I could give you my email, which is Frank Spear, FrankSpearE, @gmail.com.
And do you do like Skype sessions? Can you work with people long distance?
Absolutely, yeah.
How else can they get in touch with you?
My phone number is 480-269-FLIP, which is 53.
Well, that's quite a phone number.
5347. Okay, you got the innuendo, yeah. So for anybody who didn't pick it up, it's 269 flip. My Facebook identity is Carson Boyd, or if you just went to facebook.com/emptiness, that would take you to me as well.
Well, thank you so much for being a guest on my show today. You did shed a lot of light on this, the notion of the feminine, the sacred feminine, and what it is like to actually just let go of the ego and be in the presence of whatever's present.
Yeah.
And, you know, the other meaning for present besides being attentive and here is gift.
Yep.
So I leave people with the idea that Carson Boyd is a gift.
Oh, thank you.
You're welcome. Today I am speaking with Bonnie Gale, the co-creator of Sex Butter. What a yummy title for a great new sex product, a great lubricant product. Bonnie, how did you come up with the name Sex Butter?
Hi, Lori. I came up with the name Sex Butter because our product looks and feels like butter, and it's amazing for sex. So we wanted to have a name relevant to the purpose.
It's like basically a lubricant, but does it have enhancement qualities as well?
Yes, it does. It actually wakes women up from the inside, and it really is amazing stimulation for women and men, and it really heightens all the sensation and the intensity of the orgasm.
Oh, it sounds fabulous. Does it have a taste or a smell?
It smells like dark chocolate mint, and it kind of has almost like a non-taste taste. It's kind of like a coconut oil taste.
Coconut oil, yum. That's my favorite oil. I put coconut oil in my body every day, so this sounds like a no-brainer for me.
Oh my God, well that's our main ingredient in the product.
Cocoa butter has a very subtle, it's like a nuance of a taste.
Yes, exactly.
Sounds terrific. And what else is in the oil, Bonnie?
We have cocoa butter, and so that's where you get the chocolate smell from. And then shea, jojoba, and grapeseed oil, and then a little secret sauce that we put inside. That's our special proprietary blend.
Oh, it sounds lovely. So now women can use this and men can use this.
Yes. Absolutely. Can I give you a little hint that I like to tell men because it's really awesome?
Yeah.
When a couple uses this, the man becomes like the female's hero because he makes her feel better than she ever, ever, ever has before. And there's lots of little surprises that come along with that.
Now I'm very intrigued.
Personally, I use this product internally. And as you know, that most women have a really hard time having internal orgasms. And this really makes that whole experience so much easier, that men have surprises that they never really, you know, a lot of them have never experienced before with women because most women don't have internal orgasms.
So this is a product that enhances the ability for women to have orgasms and for men to get surprised and feel that way, like it enhances, stimulates, and possibly even heightens.
Exactly. And for men also, the sensation even keeps going on after the orgasm, so it is really amazing for like quicker recovery time.
Thanks so much, Bonnie. This is Bonnie Gale that I've been talking with, and she is the co-creator of a new amazing product, Sex Butter.
And you can order Sex Butter at www.sexbutter.net. That's sexbutter.net.
Thanks, everybody, for tuning in to Sex and Happiness today. My guest next time is the amazing Betty Dodson, who is in her 80s now, and she's still speaking about sex to college students. Betty Dodson was very, very important in my liberation and in who Laurie Handlers is today. I first got my hands on one of her books in 1972, and she's made a huge difference in my life. I can't wait to interview her, and I'd love for you to be with me. So tune into Sex and Happiness next time.
Thank you for joining us today for Sex and Happiness. To learn more about Lori and her work, please go to butterflyworkshops.com or follow her on Twitter or Facebook. You can send her an email at sexandhappiness@gmail.com. And if you'd like to listen to podcasts of Lori's previous show, Tantra Cafe, please go to tantracafe.com. We'll see you again right here next week for another edition of Sex and Happiness. Want you to make-